Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, folks. This episode is sponsored by Spoken, which is a very convenient way to learn English with messaging apps like Line, WeChat, WhatsApp, Viber, and Facebook Messenger. Basically, with Spoken, you get an English coach in your pocket. You can have private lessons with trained native speaking instructors, with expertly crafted English learning content designed to meet your needs. You can do tasks, have lessons on your phone whenever you want. And it's not just a robotic app like Duolingo. There's a real person on the other side responding to you and your specific needs. And you can do your lessons on your phone in your messaging app. So that's when you're on the bus or when you're in bed or when you're just, you know, you've got some spare time at work or something. You can chat with your instructor, do the tasks they send, and get some English into your daily life. Sign up with Spoken for a free 60-minute one-to-one private lesson with a trained native speaking instructor and a free assessment of your current English skills. The hour free lesson is via a very intensive messaging-based lesson. The vast majority of messages exchanged are voice messages, and an average hour lesson typically contains about 300 exchanges between learner and coach. The free lesson is essentially a no-strings-attached free trial. After the lesson, learners can decide to continue via a plan or not, and the plans are very affordable. Luke's English podcast listeners receive 20% off for their first month of their plan, regardless of which plan they sign up for. To qualify for all of this and for more information, you need to use my URL, which is getspoken.com/LEP. Getspoken.com/LEP, or click a Spoken logo on my website. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, everyone. How are you doing? Hope you're doing all right. Here's a new episode of the Rick Thompson Report. Long-term listeners will be familiar with this type of episode. This is where I talk to my dad about the news, which is almost always about Brexit. We've been doing these episodes ever since the Brexit referendum happened, tracking the UK government as they attempt to extract the country from the EU. We've heard all about the Leave campaign and their claims, the impossible job of negotiating a deal with an entity that you're also leaving, which is kind of like marrying someone that you're also divorcing at the same time. The last time I did a Rick Thompson report on the podcast was in December last year, and we talked about the state of the UK's negotiation with the EU, with the shaky Prime Minister Theresa May attempting to put together a new deal which could somehow keep things as good as possible while also letting us leave the European Union. Both my dad and I are quite perplexed by the desperate need to leave the EU when it looks like just cutting off your nose to spite your face. Sometimes I hear from people or read things on social media that suggest that they think that the UK as a whole wants to leave the EU. I might read comments about how Britain wants to leave or Britain doesn't want to be in the EU, and I feel a bit annoyed because there are plenty of British people who think that Brexit is a bad idea. I'm one of those people, and so is my dad. We make no bones about that. But this episode isn't done for some ideological reason or because we've picked sides or something. It's because it just doesn't really make practical sense to close access to our biggest marketplace and a zone which also includes all sorts of environmental, scientific and security communities that we will also be leaving. Also, the real prospect of leaving the EU with no deal could be catastrophic in many ways. And even the UK government is issuing advice about stockpiling food and other measures in the event of a no-deal Brexit. The deadline is approaching fast, and the UK still hasn't found an agreement with the EU. What will happen next March when we leave officially? And how will this affect life in the UK? Listen on to find out in this episode of the Rick Thompson Report. I do invite your comments, of course. So if you feel like you have something to say, please leave your comment in the comment section on the website. I'm very curious to know what the rest of the world is thinking. But now, without any further ado, let's talk to my dad about the latest Brexit news. This is the Rick Thompson Report with Rick Thompson. Hello, Dad. Welcome back onto the podcast for another Rick Thompson Report. How are you?
Hello, Luke. How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
Now, we talk about Brexit in these episodes, and it's been a while since the last time we did this. It's nearly 50 episodes ago that we were last talking about this subject, which is quite a long time. It's about 6 months. No, more.
Gosh, is it that long?
No, it's more. Yes. It was December last year, actually, so it's been quite a long time. Why have we not talked about this?
Well, I don't know, but probably A, because a lot of your listeners will find it just tedious, and B, because so little has actually happened in the last 8 or 9 months to change the situation. It's still extremely confused.
Right. And also, it's, to be fair, not the most fun and enjoyable topic for us to talk about, is
it? No, there aren't too many laughs in it, not too many jokes. The satirical magazine this week had a nice cover reflecting the story of the woman who was lost at sea for 10 hours. Did you read that story?
No.
She jumped or fell off the back of a cruise liner off Croatia and survived for 10 hours in the water and was picked up by the Coast Guard, which made a lot of publicity. You know, how did she manage it?
Yeah.
And so the satirical magazine's cover has a picture of Theresa May, and it says, "Woman lost and all at sea." So the fact is, of course, that Theresa May is still there as Prime Minister, despite predictions that she couldn't survive the divisions in her own party, the Conservative Party. And she may well continue on until we get to the Brexit moment itself.
So do you remember where we were the last time we talked about this, Dad?
Yes, it was the end of the first phase of the negotiations with the EU, where they had to they'd insisted that we settle the financial settlement because we'd made commitments to EU programs, which we would have to honour, and that was agreed. There were one or two other things I can't remember that they said that had to be agreed. I think status of citizens, EU citizens living in the UK. And once there'd been a general agreement on that, then they agreed to move on to the future relationship. You know, what, if you like, trade relationship and other relationships the UK would have after it had left the EU. So this was hailed as by the Brexiteers as, you know, a good move, and now we're moving on to the trade areas. But actually, it didn't mean that much. The negotiations have gone badly, have not got very far. The big issues are still unresolved. And the ruling Conservative Party here has got more and more divided over what kind of end game we want. So, yes, it's difficult to say that there's been a lot of progress. The progress has been kind of up and down with the political your stuff going on here. The Brexit secretary, who was called David Davis, who was leading the negotiations on behalf of the government, actually resigned not long ago.
Why?
Good question. He basically wouldn't support the compromise plan that Theresa May had got the government to agree, the cabinet to agree, at a two-day meeting in her country house at Chequers. The Chequers plan didn't suit David Davis, so he said, "I don't agree with it."
Why not? What was it about the Chequers? You described it as a compromise plan.
A compromise as far as the British government is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's got around her table people who just want to walk away from the EU and say, "Well, to hell with you, we're just going to leave."
Yeah.
And others who say the implications of doing that, according to the analysis and according to experts who should know what they're talking about, is that that would be a disaster. And so we have to, so the compromise deal was basically to have, you know, a transition period, and also that there would be some kind of alignment with the single market, even though we weren't technically in it. So it's it was, as they say, too soft an approach for David Davis, who was a tough Brexiteer, and some of the others.
So the government is divided between people who believe in soft Brexit and people who believe in hard Brexit. Is that right?
That's right.
Are there any left who still think we should remain?
Yes, I think there probably are. I mean, obviously, the government position is we're leaving, and they can't, you can't reverse the referendum result, and we're just going to, you know, get a good deal. The Chancellor of the Exchequer, the man who holds all the money, he's called Philip Hammond, is pretty clearly of the view that it's going to be bad news for us, whatever happens. And this week, he issued his own warning. After financial analysis by the people who work in his department in the Treasury, predicting that if we don't get some kind of single market deal, then it could lead to us having to borrow lots more money. He said up to 80 billion a year. Wow. 80 billion pounds, that's 80,000 million pounds per year, was the, an estimate. You know, rising over the next, say, 15 years. And so, and there's also, you know, warnings about, you know, the impact on various sectors of the economy. So I don't think the Chancellor thinks that leaving the EU is a particularly good idea, but he's going along with it, but issuing warnings, which the Brexiteers say is Project Fear nonsense.
Right.
You know, all nonsense.
This is what the Brexiteers say whenever anyone says anything like negative, any negative projections about leaving the EU, either with a deal or without one. If there are any negative things, then they're just labelled as being Project Fear.
Yes, and the nationalist press here, the newspapers, which overwhelmingly the popular papers are in favour of Brexit and have been for years. They've, you know, managed to get to the point where they really dislike the EU and they think we should, you know, get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
They are leading all this stuff. So when the Chancellor warns of financial cost of leaving, they call him Eeyore. Eeyore is a character from the Christopher Robin Pooh Bear stories.
Yeah, the Winnie the Pooh.
He's the donkey who is always miserable and always negative and always pessimistic and depressed.
Right.
So, so this is what the press do. If Hammond says there's analysis showing it's going to be bad news, they simply call him Eeyore.
Right. Yeah. Great. We've heard about the press before, particularly the right wing press. They have an agenda which is very obvious. And it's very Eurosceptic, and they've been reporting on the European Union for years with this kind of negative bias. I mean, we always end up talking about why they're interested in doing that. I've read various sort of slightly disturbing things about how the people who actually control these papers, in many cases, they don't even register their companies in the UK. They're registered abroad in sort of tax havens, and their interests in Brexit and things like that are not really about, you know, the people, the ordinary working people in the UK. It's more about sort of complicated financial investments and offshore hedge funds and all that kind of thing. It's very insidious.
Yes, it is. It's difficult for me to say why some of these influential press barons are so hostile to the EU. It may partly be because they think leaving it would make them richer. But I think it's also the fact that they are of a very right-wing market economy persuasion, and they don't like regulation of any kind. And of course, the EU's regulation is all about protecting citizens from people like them.
Right.
So, I mean, the EU has a very good record, in my view, of passing legislation which is protecting citizens from excessive, unfair practices by big business and protecting them from governments that may act in an undemocratic or well, technically illegal way. And so when you look at the EU, you have to say actually it is 500 million people who are protected by a code of conduct where everybody has to sign up to it. And some of the nationalists in this country, and of course in the other countries like Italy, where there's strong nationalist feeling, they just resent the fact that they can't do whatever they want without having to be ruled by EU law, which they cast as foreign interference, though of course it's nothing of the kind. It's an international court composed of senior lawyers from all the member states. So nationalist feeling is behind all this. We just wave the flag. We don't need the EU.
Going back to the story then, Dad, so there was the, what was it called, the Chequers deal that was this kind of compromise deal knocked up by Theresa May and her cabinet, her government. Then has it it's been presented to the EU, the cabinet deal. What's going on with that then? Yeah, what was their response?
Before we get to that, we could say that there was someone else who couldn't stand the cabinet Chequers deal.
Yes.
And that person was Boris Johnson, a colourful character who was the foreign secretary. But he either got sacked or walked out, can't be sure which, because he didn't like it either. So we have a fragmented government falling apart at the seams in many ways. So there's a new foreign secretary. There is a new Brexit secretary, a guy called Dominic Raab, who wasn't very well known beforehand. And he's now continuing on the negotiations. So he puts the Chequers plan to Michel Barnier, who is the European Commission's chief negotiator on behalf of all the member states. And, we're waiting to see what they think. There are various voices from different member states, some rather supportive and some contemptuous, about the idea that you can have your cake and eat it, a commonly used phrase, which means that we don't want to be in the EU, but we want all the benefits.
Yes. It's the same old story there, isn't it? Mm. So the people campaigning to leave, what is it that they actually want then?
Now
that we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of, you know, hammering out a deal potentially, and the hard Brexiteers are unhappy with the compromise deal and all that stuff, what is it that the leavers really want, and will they get it from the various potential Brexits that we have ahead of us?
You're asking me a question I can't really answer. Let's take an example. One of the leading figures in Theresa May's cabinet, who is a Brexiteer, I must admit I don't like that word very much. I'd prefer Brexiter.
Right.
Brexiteer sounds like a romantic musketeer. But anyway, one of the leading Brexiters is called Liam Fox, and he is the international trade secretary, put in that position by Theresa May because he's always advocated the fact that we'll do terrific trade deals with the United States and with other countries once we leave the EU. Because the rules are this, that the single market and the associated customs union mean that we work as a block. The EU trades as a block, and it does trade deals with the other parts of the world as a unit. Mm-hmm. And it means that you don't do a separate trade deal. So, you know, France can't go off and do a different trade deal with Brazil, because the EU is busy doing a trade deal with Brazil, which will work for all the member states. Obviously, it would work for all the member states. If you agree, for example, that we're going to have no tariffs on Brazilian bananas, you can't have one of the member states being different. Mm. So the argument from Liam Fox, the International Trade Secretary, is, well, if we fall out of the EU and retire to what's called World Trade Organization rules, these are the WTO.
Yes.
Has, you know, established international tariffs on goods. He says that's not a problem. Other countries work on WTO rules. We would immediately strike fantastic trade deals with other countries. Mm-hmm. Everybody's, you know, worrying far too much. So that's their position. They think the EU holds us back from doing trade freely with the rest of the world.
Right. Okay.
I don't agree. And I don't think all the analysis we've seen so far backs that up. So to do a trade deal with the United States would take years, and the fact is that since we voted to leave the EU, Donald Trump has been installed as the president, and he is a protectionist, an America first. He's already, you know, imposed trade sanctions on China and one thing or another. The worst possible atmosphere in which to go wanting a nice trade deal, because he's only interested in keeping out imports that will affect American jobs.
I'm quite sure that the trade deal that we had with the EU was far sweeter than the trade deal that we could strike up with the WTO. I know that it's much more expensive to trade with based on WTO standards. There are tariffs, there are, you know, taxes and things like that. And the free trade deal within the EU is amazing. And it's really unprecedented.
I think it is. And it is unprecedented. And it is the biggest market, single market in the world, not just by numbers of people, but by value of goods.
It's the UK's biggest market as well, by far.
Yes, it is.
We buy sell more from the EU than from any other market.
Yes, we do. So, you know, for me, who is appalled by the idea of us leaving the EU under any circumstances, but particularly without some kind of decent agreement, I find it baffling. And the evidence is piling up. Let us say this week, it was actually the 23rd of August, the government here in the UK published a number of advice papers on different aspects of what might happen if we had no deal at all.
Right.
And it includes some fairly scary things. They're talking about they would stockpile medicines to make sure we had 6 weeks of supply. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Right, and wait a minute. Stockpiling medicine, just to be clear, means collecting lots and lots of medicine so that if we weren't able to get it anymore, we'd have a supply. It's the sort of thing that you would do in the event of a zombie outbreak or yes, some other similar situation. You would stockpile medicine, you'd stockpile food and other resources. And this is in the government's advice paper, which is basically, oh, by the way, it looks like we might not get the deal that we have been looking for because, frankly, it's impossible to please every single person. You know, all the rainbow of different wishes that all of the leavers want, first of all, it's impossible to actually achieve that. And anyway, we wouldn't be able to negotiate for it with the EU in any case because we're in absolutely no position to, you know, strike a hard bargain. So we're just going to have to get some awful compromise that will make no one happy and that will be far worse than what we had before, or we just leave with absolutely nothing at all. Right?
You're in danger of ranting like I do.
Well, it's impossible not to talk about this without starting to rant,
you get,
isn't
so,
it?
You get, it's excellent. So many ironies. Ironies is probably a difficult word. I mean, trying to work out what irony actually means has always been difficult.
It can mean a few things.
Let's call it contradictions. There's a lot of contradictions here. That, for example, one of the reasons that we think a lot of people voted to leave the EU was because of the immigration scare going on at the time.
Okay.
That we had far too many people coming into Britain. It was an attractive place to come to. And free movement of people is an essential part of being in the single market.
Yeah.
So EU member people could come here, you know, as freely as they like. Flash the passport and you come, you can get a job, you can buy a house. Basically, you know, the whole of the EU is like that.
Yeah.
There were these arguments that saying, well, you know, we've lost control of our borders because we can't control these people coming in from the EU. And they were pointing the finger at the less affluent states like Romania and Bulgaria. Not to mention, we had a lot of Polish people coming in when they joined the EU as well.
Yeah.
The irony, or if you like, the contradiction, is that now the government is conceding quite openly that we need a lot of EU workers to keep the country going.
Yeah.
Take the health service, for example. We have lots of European doctors, nurses, and care workers working in this country. And the idea that they're going to stop coming would be catastrophic. And the Association of Nurses and the Doctors Associations are all saying we must be able to recruit people to get people to come and keep our health services going. Mm-hmm. Not to mention lots of other things.
Yes.
You know, the fruit pickers are extremely worried because they're seasonal workers, who a lot of them come from Romania. They come in and pick all our fruit, and they say, well, if they don't come, the fruit will rot in the fields. So suddenly the government is starting to say, oh, well, of course, that we would make sure that people we needed would be able to come in. Well, what does that mean? Do you invent some kind of score system to allow some people in and some people not? So there's a contradiction here that the immigration thing has turned on its head, and everybody's suddenly realizing that we actually need immigration. And remember that our unemployment rate here in the UK is extremely low, the lowest it's been for years. It's not like, you know, people are coming in and taking our jobs. There are lots of jobs to be taken.
One of the positions that was always said was that we're taking back control. But, I mean, there's an example of how actually the opposite may well be true, that it will, throw everything into chaos. I read an interesting article about food in the event of a no-deal Brexit, which is basically where suddenly all of our agreements all come to an end, the treaties all stop, and that includes things like the way in which food is brought into the country and taken out of the country. Most of the food that we buy and that we eat comes from the EU. That, just like most other things, it's our biggest market, and we get lots and lots of food from there. We also sell food into the EU. Now, if we don't have a deal, a sort of a customs deal, on March the 29th?
Yes, next year.
Then
just about 7 and a bit months away.
Then suddenly, when the UK leaves the EU, there'll be all these huge barriers and costs at the border. So, for example, if you're a van driver who drives stuff into Europe or back, normally what you do in this situation now, with the, you know, as we're in the EU, it's kind of a frictionless border. You just go through, maybe quickly sign a paper or stamp something and just go through the border and off you go, and you continue delivering. And this is how, you know, our supermarkets get all the food that they need, all the tomatoes and fruit and stuff that's fresh and on the shelves every day. It's because of this system of just in time, which is a sort of logistics, you know, solution to, you know, always having fresh products on your shelves.
Yes, you can't store it for a long time. It has to come in and immediately go on the shelves.
We've got this system just in time, which is incredibly efficient, and it means that you don't have to have large storage areas where you're keeping all of the products. It just moves seamlessly from the shelves, you know, into the consumers' pockets, and then it's replaced with this constant flow of new stuff that's coming in and not being stored anywhere. We don't have storage facilities anymore because the whole distribution system is so slick, and that really depends on the frictionless border. But if when we come out, we don't have a deal, every single van or truck will have to be checked.
In theory, but the
trucks will have to get different types of form that will need to be completed. The checking will be a lot more stringent, and it won't be possible to just go through the border anymore. You'll have to wait. You'll have to park in several different places, one of them being in London, where you need to pick up various papers, and it takes hours and hours and hours. And that's for every single vehicle going through. So if you can imagine the queuing, the queues and the jams that will happen at the borders, and people are talking about stockpiling food, and people are talking about the idea that we might see that suddenly the supermarket shelves are bare because they can't get the food in on time. And so that brings us to what you're saying, which is that will they actually check them? And the only solution to prevent this kind of gridlock would be for the UK government to basically say, well, okay, we'll just accept that if the stuff is coming out of the European Union and they've checked it on their end, we'll just assume that it's okay, and we won't impose all of our checks. We'll just assume that basically it's all safe, and we'll bring it all in without checking it. That's the only way to keep the things moving.
That is exactly what they're saying, that, oh, well, you know, we couldn't possibly have a situation where, you know, The food wasn't coming in.
So they'll just.
So they would wave it through.
They'll just wave it through.
But so then, is this taking back control?
Yeah, is this taking back control? No, because suddenly you're just waving through some stuff that you haven't even checked. It'll make us extremely susceptible to fraudsters who can just send us any old crap and we're not checking it. So, you know, that's dangerous. I mean, that's a public health issue. If you're suddenly just waving through food, which is going to go, you know, into consumers' kitchens, and you're not even checking it for safety, that's hugely negligent and dangerous a thing to do. Not to mention all of the stuff that we export to Europe, which will also be blocked.
Ah, well, that's the other thing. See, what I was saying, Luke, is that at the moment we get loads and loads of trucks and containers coming into docks like Felixstowe every day, full of stuff from the EU, whether it's food or whether it be car parts or whether it be medicines or whatever it might be. And it, obviously, if this was held up and people had to fill in forms, as you say, everything would come shuddering to a halt. So I think that the Brexiteers will say, well, EU goods are coming in at the moment, and why should anything change? EU goods come in, we don't have to worry about them. Though, of course, there is the idea that we would have to collect duty on certain things on behalf of the EU, which would be ironic. Uh-huh. No, it's the other way around is the concern as well, mm-hmm. that the EU, which is a block. Imagine it as kind of being a unit where once you're inside, you're inside. But the idea that we become what's called a third country means that we would have to adhere to certain checks from things coming from outside the EU into the EU. And there are tariffs on these things depending on what it is and where you're coming from.
Yeah.
So suddenly our exporters are the people facing with being unable to export things, and some of it is perishable goods. Mm. I mean, we export fruit and veg as well. So the answer is, I don't know what on earth will happen.
Yeah.
The government's position is we are confident that we will get an arrangement that is suitable, and all we're doing is having a contingency plan in case things go badly wrong, and we are looking at all the different areas and issuing advice about things. Well, it's not very useful advice at the moment, and we wait and see how the next few months go. So what happens next? Well, I mean, another European summit coming up, October the 18th. It is supposed to be a bit of a crunch where either the member states, and the summit is all the member states getting together, either the member states indicate that they'll go with the outline of Theresa May's Chequers agreement, which means aligning ourselves with their customs union, having similar rules and one thing and another, and having a transition period, which would take us up to the start of 2021. I mean, it's less than 2-year transition period. If they say, okay, then maybe, the negotiations will start to take shape. But there are several hurdles to get through. First of all, is that one. Mm-hmm. And there's always the chance they'll say, no, we can't see the detail here. It's not clear enough. And they'll wait till the next summit in December. Just getting perilously close to Brexit Day. Mm. Another hurdle is that the House of Commons, Westminster House of Commons, has got to agree the plan.
Okay.
And they are deeply divided. Mm. Another hurdle is that the European Parliament has to endorse any decisions by the member states. And the European Parliament might cause a problem. And then there are outstanding issues that no one seems to be solving, particularly the Irish border, the border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. It still isn't resolved. And Ireland is a key member state. And if Ireland doesn't think there's a satisfactory solution to having free movement across the border, then they may block the whole thing. So it's a package deal. You one thing can scupper the whole deal.
Right. It's almost impossible to get a situation where everyone will be happy and everything will be all right.
It's looking pretty bad, but I don't want the listeners to think we're you know, making it a doomsday scenario. But it is concerning. It's very concerning that it is such a chaotic mess, mainly because the government can't agree within itself about what the perfect end result should be.
So we're all kind of pulling our hair out and kicking the furniture over the idea of this zombie apocalypse, no deal Brexit situation where suddenly there are no food, there's no food on the table, and we come crashing out of security alliances with the EU. And, you know, far from taking back control, we find ourselves sitting in a burning building. We're kind of scared and alarmed by this prospect. But yeah, are we being alarmist? I mean, really, honestly, do you think, what do you imagine is going to happen? I know that you'll say that you don't know, but do you really think that we could crash out and that everything could fall to pieces? Do you really think that's possible? Or
I think it is possible. Yes, I do think it's possible. I think that we can see Brexit Day coming with absolutely no deal.
Mm-hmm.
And huge queues of lorries approaching Dover when they can't get across because new border checks have been imposed. I can see shortages of certain things.
Yeah.
I think that there would be political ramifications too. I think there would be a certain amount of unrest if parts of the country found that they, you know, were being seriously disadvantaged, prices going up, the value of the pound falling. The pound is still falling at the moment because there's so much uncertainty. It's getting very, very close to being the same value as a euro. I mean, it's not far off.
Yeah.
And there are all sorts of reasons why I think that it could be a mess. We will hope that the other member states, let's take Germany, for example, doesn't want to damage its own position. It wants to export Mercedes to the UK. It wants to deal with us.
Yeah.
And so the hope is that the member states will make it a transition period, which will be acceptable to just about everybody, I think.
Yes.
And that's on March next year will be the start of transition period where they try and unscramble the mess.
It's basically an extension, isn't it? The transition period.
It's basically
period.
An extension, yes, except here's another contradiction. We would still be following their rules, but we wouldn't be at the table.
Right, okay.
I mean, there is they talk about the Norway model. Your listeners probably get completely confused by the distinctions between the single market and the European Customs Union and the EEA, the European Economic Area.
Mm-hmm.
The Economic Area is basically the area embracing the single market, and it has a few states that are not in the EU, Norway being the biggest, got Iceland, Liechtenstein, and some people in the UK say, well, why don't we adopt the Norway model? But the Brexiteers absolutely wouldn't have that. For this reason, that they say we'd still be under the rules of the Commission. We wouldn't even have a say in making the rules. And that's the problem that Norway has got. Norway has quite a strong political faction that thinks that they should be in the EU and not be governed by it without being represented.
But sort of for Norway, it's different because they're basically okay because they have so much natural gas and oil. So
yes,
it sort of doesn't really matter that much for them because
it's a relatively small country. I mean, how many citizens in Norway? Is it 5 million? I might be wrong. I mean, we've got 67 million and our economy is bound up with many of the European member states in a way that Norway's isn't really. And the difficulties facing the UK, its financial centre, its fact that it's a nuclear power, there's all sorts of things that make it particularly difficult to unscramble your relationship with the EU.
And I expect the ones who will suffer the most will be the ones who probably voted for Brexit in the first place. Right.
Well, that's another contradiction. The analysis rather suggests that the poorer areas of the country are the ones that are most likely to be worst affected if we have an economic crash. And remember that London voted to remain.
Yeah.
And Scotland voted to remain.
Yeah.
And the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, when she saw these advice notes and these preparations for a no-deal Brexit, said this is an absolute disaster zone. So
yeah, I mean, it is. It's unbelievable that the government are, you know, posting these advice documents saying, oh yes, by the way, might be a good idea to start stockpiling food and medicine.
Well, they're not
and to get
that.
You
they
know
not saying
to activate
that.
The army.
They think it's going to be reassuring everybody that they are prepared for any scenario. Yes, they have mentioned having the army on standby to make sure essential supplies get through. I don't know whether that's the army's job, but they're supposed to be reassuring that they are preparing. And also, as I said earlier, it's supposed to be a negotiating ploy. It says we're ready to walk away from the table if you, the EU, don't make some compromises.
Okay.
I mean, it is. I mean, your listeners will probably think, "Oh, you know, Brexit again, Brexit. Why don't they just get on with it?" Well, yes, but it's quite interesting in that never before has a country left the European Union. It's unprecedented.
We're the first.
Hey,
champions.
It's quite interesting to see how an alliance of democratic nations formed over many years, how you can remove yourself without it being very, very damaging to you. So, you know, an academic exercise. This is an unprecedented one.
Yeah, that's the only good thing you can say about it, right? It's like, well, first time. No one else has done it. There we are, leaders again in some weird way.
Yes, I know. And of course, there are Eurosceptic movements in other EU member states, some of them quite strong. One of the pressures on the EU negotiator, Michel Barnier, will be, actually, we can't make it too easy for the UK to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah, we want everybody to see that leaving the EU is a really bad idea. So they can't give us too much.
They'll make an example of us, won't they?
Maybe the Eurosceptic press will say we are being punished by the EU. Well, we're the ones leaving.
Oh dear. So there you go, listeners. It's still it's still a complete mess.
Do you want to talk about something else?
I don't know what else is there to talk about. The football season's beginning again, isn't it?
Yeah, great. Yes.
Premiership.
Yeah, we love that.
Have they played any games yet?
Yes, they've played a few games.
What's going on then?
The usual suspects are looking good. It's all about Manchester City. Can anybody beat Manchester City, mm-hmm. who won the Premier League last year by a mile? And I'm a Liverpool supporter, and Liverpool look pretty good. And people are saying they may be challenging Man City, but there were the others, Chelsea, terrific, Manchester United, usual big city, Tottenham. The usual big teams will probably be the ones up at the top.
Arsenal?
Though there's always a possibility of a surprise in the Premier League. Remember, Leicester City won it a couple of years ago, can you believe that?
Yeah.
And we've got some new teams in the Premiership after promotion, and one of them is Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Ah.
The Wolves, one of the original Football League teams with a great, glorious history, notably in the 1950s and 60s. And they've been in lower leagues until they're now back. And romantically, you want Wolves to at least stay there and do quite well.
They'll probably get smashed, though, won't they?
Well, they might do. But the fact is they won the championship to get promoted very well. And the nice thing is that they are a West Midlands team near Birmingham. Wolverhampton is one of those big industrial areas just next to Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a great footballing history, that area. And they haven't had a really good team there for a long time. Aston Villa are still around. West Bromwich Albion are still around. But they're not in the same kind of class as the Manchester Uniteds of this world.
Mm.
So wouldn't it be great if Wolves did well?
It would. It would be brilliant. Okay, right. Well, I think that's probably all we've got time for here, Dad. But I'm sure that my listeners they're not quite as fed up with the subject as you might think. And I've had...
Well, I hope that the listening to the English is probably... useful as well. It's some of the phraseology is kind of political,
mm-hmm.
and some of it's to do with the EU. It's a difficult thing to understand the EU. A lot of people in this country don't understand it at all, But it's useful to remember the difference between the European Commission, which, you know, is in many ways the civil service and administration of the EU, and the Council, the summits where the member states get together, and the European Parliament, which has a lot of power to, without the European Parliament agreeing anything, no law can be passed. So the EU has got these three power bases, and it also is all backed up by the European Court of Justice, which makes sure that everyone plays by the rules. That's the EU, basically.
Yeah.
And a lot of people here in this country don't know the difference between the Commission and the Council and everything else.
Yeah, they just think they're a bunch of faceless, unelected bureaucrats, don't they?
Oh, yes. Yeah, you get letters in the newspapers saying, you know, telling the negotiators, tell these crooks, unelected crooks in Brussels to go and jump off a cliff.
I don't know where they're getting this idea from, because, I mean, fair enough, the civil servants, is that the Commission?
Commission, it's got more power than a civil service because it proposes legislation, it negotiates it.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it's basically the thing that administers the EU.
The Commission is not elected, right?
No, they're not. But the president of the Commission, who is currently Jean-Claude Juncker, has to be approved by the member states, the heads of, you know, democratically elected governments.
That's the council, isn't it? The
yes.
heads of state who get
it's
together.
The council.
That's the council. And so they're elected because they're the elected leaders of each member state. So that's
indeed.
The council. And then the European Parliament, they're elected. Directly elected members of parliament. So I don't know quite where this idea that the whole thing is undemocratic really comes from. It's just like a big parliament, isn't it?
Another irony or contradiction is that over here in the UK, we have two houses at Westminster. One of them is elected, the House of Commons, and the other one isn't.
Yeah.
The House of Lords.
Yeah, so...
So who's more democratic?
Arguably, our parliament is less democratic than the European Parliament or the EU. Yeah, I mean, it's
Definitely. Just
it's just a load of prejudices and vested interests... and fake news and propaganda, which has been drip-fed to the British public for years and years and years, and it's all politics, and I feel like a lot of people have been scammed, you know, a lot of people have been duped into believing that the EU is a toxic entity when in fact it's not, and that the reality of coming out of the European Union, which, you know, is something that has been developed over decades and is generally a very good system, and we've thrived being part of the EU, that this is somehow some kind of toxic arrangement. And leaving it is just, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, I think it's ridiculous, as you know. Well, there's lots of twists and turns to come, and people can watch the TV news and see these twists and turns coming up in the next few months. Next month in September, the government is supposed to publish its proposed immigration policy after it's left the EU. Now, that'll be interesting. The summit, as I said, on October the 18th, might be a crunch or it might be delayed. You know, decisions may be delayed again. And we're waiting for another raft of advice papers from the government on planning for a no-deal Brexit, which will either reassure everybody or panic everybody.
Okay. Well, Dan, thanks for talking to all of us about this again. I'm sure my
listeners appreciate. It's my pleasure, and it's always great to listen to your podcast, and I hope you know, your viewers, listeners, I should say, listeners haven't been too bored by all this stuff going on in the UK.
Of course not. They can leave their comments. Listeners, you can leave your comments in the comments section. We will be glad to read them and see what you think. But Dad, for now, thanks for talking to us, and we'll speak to you again on the podcast soon. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is the Rick Thompson Report with Rick Thompson. So there you have it. There are my dad's thoughts on Brexit. I certainly hope that you've enjoyed this episode of the Rick Thompson Report, keeping you up to date on Britain's tricky situation. As I said earlier, please do leave your thoughts in the comments section. I'm curious to know what the rest of the world is thinking. I wonder how Brexit is reported and generally considered in your country. Is the leading narrative that Brexit is a good or bad thing? And why do you think that is? Do you think Brexit would help or harm your country in some way? Do leave your comments in the comments section. Thanks, as ever, for listening, leaving comments, and generally being great audience members. Have a great day or morning or afternoon or evening or night, and I'll speak to you again soon. But for now, goodbye. Bye. 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 Bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.